Brother Richard, who understands the he's a teacher also, but he could also speak the Tlingit language very fluently and knows the history of our people. And but I kind of grew up with my dad's side because my dad was one of the very few high school graduates from Selden Jackson that resided in Huna. And I remember very clearly when we were first become a state, you know. I was helped my dad paint the boat, and they had all kinds of politicians that came to my dad, you know. One time they tried to make him run for the mayor, you know. He said, no, I'd rather be a councilman or not a mayor. But he wanted to just take this side, step aside, but do his thing on the outside. So one day I heard some politicians come around here and said, the statehood is going to be a good thing for your people. You're going to have more representation. You're going to have representation in Congress. You have voice. And with all the division that I see how the political manipulation that goes on over here in Alaska, you know, they kind of divide our, they put us one against the other, you know. They divide Huna, Angul, Taniki, or Sitka, and they probably know our history or something, you know, that where they devise, manipulate everything against one of our people, so that we don't have any representation from our people can't get elected from Southeast Alaska. We have I just heard today we had one lawyer that passes exam today, and I don't see why he couldn't get on the as a legislature to represent our people, to hear our voices, what we want. And but to go back to the Congress, I remember E.L. Bob Bartlett and Ernest Greening, when they were first running, first delegates to Congress. And of course, my dad was convinced then, and I remember the old man, George Betts, he was a preacher, and he said, by God, you know, that would be a good thing. If well, George Betts was the reverend, and he was a very educated individual where he can take shorthand, you know, and take down everything for verbatim. And, of course, the people met over there, and by God, you know, we're going to have Congress. People, now they're going to listen to us, you know. But after it became a state, you know, it just went the other way. It got worse. It's the way I see it right now. And we never got any representation. And, of course, when I got out of the Army, it's like the rest of them, you know, I don't know why. I always hear our people, you know, they always want us to fight for the United States. Okay, we do to fight our country. But when they come back, they don't treat us right, you know. And that's, I think, as far as employment also, you know, that's where we have problems too. Even the Supreme Court ruled that when you work for the Bureau of Indians, you know, you say that you'll have first preference on the job, you know, but it doesn't work out that way, where they manipulate everything, different policy, criteria, they set up against you, you know, where you can't maneuver or get a decent job for our people. And they have people coming up from all over directions to this country. And it's kind of difficult to actually retaliate or just take it on the chin or what, you know. So that's some of the things I have seen as far as when I heard the people talking about our rights and fisheries, and I've kind of questioned the tide lands too, you know, that when it comes to tide lands, I also think that if we own the land over here, the person that owned the land should own that land right below them. But over here, it hasn't worked that way. Everything is manipulated. If you don't pay your taxes, you lose your land. And that's some of the things I have seen that's going around here, you know, as an individual, observe everything. And then when we, when the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act came about, you know, I was in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I was so anxious to come up here and really help out. I finally made it up here, and I started working for our people here and there. After the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act was settled, you know, of course, everybody was happy and things like that, you know. I saw some good things in there, and I saw some things that I didn't agree with first time when the where the subsistence was in there, was not in that first act when it came about until an ELCA or D2, I think, that pushed back the subsistence back in there again. And also, I wasn't too happy with or pleased to see that, well, we extinguished our rights under the land claims. And to me, that was a piece of legislation which I see it still needs to be ironed out, straightened out. There are things in there that's good, and there are things in there that's not good. In other words, I know in the AMB, you know, if we're going to change our constitution, you know, we have to send it out 30 days to all the members and let them read or each camp, and so that they can easily ratify it, you know. And then when you take it to a convention, then it only takes the majority vote to pass it, you know, on the floor. But if you don't go through that procedures, well, then you have to go with the majority vote. I mean, almost 75% or something like that, or two-thirds, if you don't go through that process. And then after it passes, well, then it has to go back to membership for ratification. Like you take, for example, on this Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act, I don't think it has ever come back to the people in Alaska for ratification, to actually look at, see what has transpired in that piece of legislation. And that's a piece of legislation I kind of question as far as the land claims. I have seen good things come out of the corporation. And then bad things I didn't agree with. When Congress passed that law, to me, it looked like they want us to fail. By that I mean by, you select this piece of land. I served on the Gold Belt as a board director, and we're the ones that selected the land, you know. We selected here and there. And after we selected the land, then we organized under the federal and state laws, you know. And after we started, and we start setting up our administration, and Gold Belt, you know, we had $0. We didn't have any money to start with, you know. Gee, what the heck kind of a ball game is this, you know? You know, when you start off a business, you know, you invest your cash, which will be your capital, you know, assets equal liability, or, well, that formula that you have. But we didn't have anything to start with. In the meantime, we set up our per diem, we set up our salary and court fee, or all kinds of things that we set up in the legislation or in our corporation. And we didn't receive any assistance from anybody. And we just simply went down and proceeded with no assistance. On whatever, nobody knew what the corporations were. Probably about 80 to 20% our people know what a corporation was. Well, when I went to college, I know what preferred and common stock is, you know, and but I didn't expect our people today that we would be going into common stock, you know. I was kind of habergasted, you know. By God, I know quite a bit about this area. You know, I think I'm going to really make lots of money when I go into this type of ball game, you know. But here we are, restricted. In the meantime, there's all kinds of roadblocks. Sierra Club doing this and that against us. In the meantime, we have this time from December 18, 1971. In the meantime, whoever is supposed to convey the land to us is taking that loan to for us to manage our resources. It's taking that loan, and it seemed like to me that if it's taking that loan, they should actually give us an extension on our land claims or beyond 1991, which is 7 or 8 years from now. And we're all concerned about 1991. And I haven't have any solution. And from what I hear among our people, from our stockholders, is that if our corporation don't make any money, I'm just going to, hey, I'm going to sell it for $100, and here it is. And that's going to be the attitude of our people. And that's what I've been hearing. And it's they're saying that only the ones that have a dozen or a dozen that's working for the corporation are the ones that are making it. And I don't have anything against our corporation. I'm behind them for whatever they do. But when this thing started, it just was a mistake after mistake. And when they negotiated the contract with who to deal with, of course they know what arbitration is now or conditions and. And set them contracts, but we're learning, and our people are starting to progress. But I don't think we should have gone that route. I think there should have been a better avenue for our people to pursue on the administration of all the corporations throughout Alaska. And another thing I see is that if I were on the other side, our people in Southeast Alaska, the way I see it from my point of view, as far as economics, when I studied economics, you know, I learned about supply and demand. And to me, supply and demand, like our people learn about it just by common sense. But common sense is like for example, on the halibut, when there is not enough halibut for us to harvest, what happens? The price on halibut goes up. But if there's lots of halibut, what happens? The price goes down. And I look at it this way as a philosophy or a theory. Our corporations are all in the timber business. What have we done? We flooded the market with timber. And the Chinese and Chinamen can come over here and they can go to Huna and say, hey, I want to buy some timber, so many million board feet, and say, well, so much per 1,000 feet, you know. Japanese or Chinaman will say, well, but I got a better deal from Gold Belt, you know, so could you come down a little more, or you want to go Hootsnoo or Sciataca, or, well, I think I know buy. So, I mean, that's the way I see it, you know. I mean, that's a... if I were on the other side, I mean, that's what I'd do. If I were going to be a salesman or a purchaser, you know, or a procurement officer, what am I going to do? And it's how do we accomplish that? I mean, that's things I see as far as an individual, as far as land claims. It's 1971 to 84, how many years is that, you know? And our corporation hasn't made any money. Dividends, declared dividends, or Gold Belt hasn't made any dividends. Very few has declared dividends. And it's that's where our shareholders are concerned about. It's going to be it's going to come down to a dollar that when most of our shareholders are going to say, hey, the heck with it, I'll go see another ball game. Sell it, and I'll go take a trip to Hawaii before I die. And that's going to be the attitude of all the people throughout Alaska. And I think that's about the way I see it. But I'm still hung on the situation where after the land thing has passed, it hasn't gone back to our people for ratification. And another thing that bothers me too, you know, when Alaska was purchased by the Russians, you know, that there are all kinds of things in there, you know, that the Russians admit, you know, that we're not in there for sale either, you know. There are places where, of course, we defeated the Russians in Sitka. And I guess there's a history over here why we called Point Retreat, where we pushed them back there too, you know. So, in that treaty, it states in there that that you'll not disturb the native people. And right now we're sort of being disturbed, and that's why we're here, under that treaty between Russia and the United States. And there are other laws of where Chief Justice John Marshall, of I think it's somewhere around 1830, where there's all kinds of things, you know, that in there that restricts our people. In other words, they say that you can't sell the native, you can't buy a, the Indian can't sell a land without the consent of the government. So I think those parts must be looked at. And I know my brother Roy Dennis, you know, he took me up to Chilkoot, and I saw the abuse and I saw the river, witnessed what my brothers are talking about. And that's when I look at that crazy thing that's put across there, and I said, what in the hell world is that? You know, one fish can go through there, you know, it's, and I see Austin Hammond pleading to the state and the federal government, and he said he's even pleading to his brothers, which are the Brown Bears or Bear tribe, and he said, forgive them for these people who don't know what the heck they're doing. So we're not the one that's doing it. So forgive us, you know. We're kind of a unique people. We kind of even talk to the bears. We even talk to the killer whales. And right now, our killer whales over here are going to be captured, 100 killer whales per year or whatever like that, you know. And it's one of those things that we respect, because my brothers, tribal brothers, are the killer whale. And we have not objected, but during the A&B convention, there was a resolution that passed that said that went against that whole concept of capturing the killer whales here in Alaska. But I don't know why we're not making a noise in the hill of the legislation. But sometimes I feel like going up there and just sound off and, hey, you better listen to me. Your election day is coming up, so you don't listen to me, I won't vote for you, period. That's all I have, you know, and but I'll have my written testimony more prepared tomorrow when my brother and I will be coming in. Yeah, thank you very much, sir.
I know the 1991 issue, he alluded to, but he didn't have any recommendation to combat when our stocks become mature and if they should come upon the open market.
Well,
my concern is, those stocks going the wrong way. Every time I open my mouth, I'm trapping myself. I should say, if fall into the wrong hands, like a big giant corporation, other than the native corporation.
Well, is that something you will be dealing with tomorrow?
I'll elaborate on that. Of course, we're still preparing what we'll do in 1991. There are other problems that we're having. In 1991, our corporation will also be taxed, and taxed on our own land and things like that. Corporations always, to me, has a double taxation. Then after you declare dividends, then you pay taxes on that again, But in 1991, after our people, our stockholders will be able to sell their stocks to anybody they see fit, and that would be the right. But I see that, I think that our, the concept I have, or an idea I have, was that I think the law should have been written that, like, for example, when my dad died, to me that, this is just one idea, one thought. If my dad died, after he died, then the his share should have gone back to the corporation. And then whoever is born, they should have been issued a stock. As soon as the child is born, should be automatically have a share in the corporation.
Well, that's a perpetual membership corporation.
Right.
Proposals have been made at these hearings by mm-hmm. many people to convert your shareholding corporations to membership corporations so that people would, as Mr. McKinley urges, become members when they are born and they cease to be members when they die. That's in the land claim settlements that have been reached in northern Canada between Native people and the government of Canada, they have set up corporations to go into business and to hold land, but there are no shares that anyone can buy or sell. It's on a tribal basis, and people, when they are born, become members of the corporation. When they die, they cease to be members. But when Mr. Strong, Tony Strong, the new lawyer, spoke here last night, he urged that, and I said, okay, that's no doubt a good idea, but how do you convert the shareholding corporations to membership corporations? And that's not an easy question to answer. But
it's a difficult solution. Perhaps it could be created as a common stock, maybe preferred stock, declared authorization, or on the concept of corporation. But I will have a better testimony, typewritten testimony tomorrow, and I think my brother is still working on what do we have prepared for you. And but these are type of things that we're concerned about. To me, if a corporation is not the business concept, to me is it's like if I have $100,000, and if I should I just keep it in the bank and let it roll and use treasury notes where I can make money up to maybe $2,000 a year? Or could I start a business and make $20,000 a year? But if I can't make any money in a 3-year span, then I say, hey, what am I doing? I said, I just get out of it and then just put my money in the bank and let it go at that. So these are the type of things that I will be analyzing tomorrow, and my brother and I will be here to for further testimony on what has taken place. And thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman,
thank you.
Before Mr. McKay, since he's going to have a lengthy testimony tomorrow, I'd like to make a suggestion. If I was a chairman or a board of director or whatever it may be, if my corporation didn't have enough funds to buy up the stocks that are going on open market, the ones that are dedicated in any business entity, I own 100 shares. I would pledge 50% of my 100 shares to buy up the extra stocks that will be on the open market. And so far, I haven't heard anything to that effect. It's our corporation. We can put money into it. We can take money out of it. When that 1991 day comes, the law states it clearly that our stocks will become mature. From a common stock to a preferred stock. Plain language. And what I'm suggesting is, I think the corporation head should say, what are you going to do with the rest of the 50% or the 25% or the 10%? And if the corporation start making money and start paying a dividend, you will be settled with the amount of money you put back into the corporation and the amount of stocks you accumulate. Thank you. I just wanted to direct that to Mr. McKinley.
Well, I think that since we've got another day to go, this might be a good time to adjourn. And it's been a good discussion all evening, and in fact, it's been a good day's discussion. And I want to thank all of you who came tonight and who testified. And we'll adjourn now, and we'll start again at 10:15 in the morning. Pardon me?
Oh. So moved.
All right. We'll see you tomorrow. Thank you. And again.
Okay. My name is Thomas Fenton Bennett, Sr. I live here in Juneau, Alaska, and member of the Gobel and Sea Alaskan Corporation. How I feel about the land claims. Many years we waited for the land claims to be settled. I remember as the six-year-old in Sitka, our father saying, "We are going to the land claim meeting, so you children be good." I'm now 62. Now the land claims is here. It brings me many thoughts to my mind, such as, number one, where does it put me now? Number two, what is my future in the connection to claims? Number three, my feelings are that our corporation have failed us, so mismanagement, bad deals, and so forth.
Do you want to enlarge, add to anything you said in this statement? Anything you wish to add to this?
No. I'd like to keep that.
Thank you very much.
Since people, I'll say a few little words on that sovereignty. I have no inner sovereignty. I'm a dropout from the eighth grade school, but I have read about Abe Lincoln where it fed the slaves of sovereignty. The sovereignty. And where people were equal to have the right of freedom. People were created equal. And so I wrote those questions up. Let's see what it will do for me.
Okay. Thank you very much. Yes.
My name is Gene Strong, and I'm glad that everybody had a little chance to say something. And I forgot what this guy's name was.
Mr. Bennett.
Mr. Bennett, I'm sorry. I'm glad that Mr. Bennett raised a question about land claims, you know. I've heard it for a long time too, and then we finally seen it by, but I haven't seen any follow-up on it from, maybe it's from my own negligence, or I've been in different circles, because I've been in many circles here in Southeast Alaska. I've been on a member of the CSHA, which is Southeast Alaska Health System Agency, and SEARCH is Southeast Regional Health Corporation, and I'm A and B member, and also the village council that I represent in Skagway, the Skagway Traditional Village Council. We're a member of the UTA, which is United Tribes of Alaska, which is a new organization comprised of all the members of the different tribes, you know, tribal leaders. Maybe I can talk a little bit on that, of why it was born, the United Tribes of Alaska. Because the village councils going to AFN, for my experience with AFN was few, but I heard a lot about it and read it through Tundra Times and a lot of other papers. And then I got involved with civic affairs in our community, and then got involved with our village council. I got to go to these places, you know, these conventions. And all I could hear was at the AFN was the corporations, what they were doing and how they were doing. And it never reflected to me, it never reflected too much of the things that were happening on the village level, the living sector of the villages, we'd call it common people, if you will, lack of a word, but the members, you know, of the corporations. And it really bothered us because we still had a lot of problems in the social department. We had health problems, and we had just the elderly had problems because we just didn't have no voice in anything of what direction we can lead ourselves. We thought that, we thought the corporations was going to be designed to help us a little more. Like you heard in the testimonies, we thought it was a good having these corporations made up by the federal government. We thought that was going to help us all in all our aspects of life, being that we was cut out of a lot of other things in life, you know, our other traditional use things. So we still was lacking in this area. We didn't know how to go about it. We tried to push a lot of resolutions through the AFN, but it seemed like it didn't really do much, because the corporations had priority over us. It seemed that way. So all of us leaders in the villages, the IRAs and traditional councils, were just happened to be all together. And I was one of the makers of that, of the UTA, or the movers. And we got together and we have to do something, because we're not getting nowhere. And 1991 is coming around the corner. So let's organize something that'll represent the villages, you know, more down to the ground, you know, level. And a bunch of us were talking, you know, what we're gonna name it, and there were several different things, but I said, we need a united front. These were the things that we was talking. We all have to get together. And this is with talking with all the different tribes in the interior of Alaska, the Eskimos and Tanana chiefs, and all of those villagers had their representatives. So we decided we'd call it the UTA, United Tribes of Alaska, because that bond us all together, all the ethnic groups. And we wanted to have something that would represent us, not the regional corporations, because that didn't seem like it was part of us living people. So we had one representative from each ethnic group, the Yupik, I can't remember all of them, but Tlingit and Haida and Tsimshian and all of those ethnic groups. We had one representative, and those representatives were elected from the village council before they came up. And those were our board of directors. And within that board of directors, then we elected, the membership, we elected the board of directors too, which was the people that we asked to carry on our wishes, the body's wishes. And even then, we still ratified anything that we wanted to vote on or push through or to see done in the services. That's why we have a hard time. How did this angst come by? And then we heard about it, but we never had any input. It was like was railroaded. And that kind of goes along with this other testimony why that was expelled earlier. But the UTA felt better. We felt real good then because we was all finally getting together again. It was another lobby force. We realized that, you know, political push effort from the ground people. But then we started getting too far into a lot of other social activities. We realized that we needed to push to wake up some of these other organizations, especially we didn't want to go against AFN because that's our counterpart. But what we needed was a voice to the state and a voice to the federal government. We helped out on a lot of social things. We helped give direction and to a lot of these organizations that the state has and help with resolutions and things that generally help the whole state as a whole with AFN. But then we started getting bogged down. We felt like we just stepped in a tub of molasses. We couldn't get across. So just recently, we regrouped. We told them we just lost our direction. So just in the last year, we decided we'd go back to where we started from. And it made us feel good. We said we're going to drop all these social, economic things again. We'll still participate, but that isn't going to be our main goal. What we need to do is get direction back to where we was going, and that is with the sovereignty issues. We knew that a lot of the people needed education on what is sovereignty, and we had a lot of guest speakers going to these UTA meetings and AFN that told us everything that we needed to know. That we didn't know we knew already about sovereignty. So, but we still needed to get back to the people and let them know, and let the villages know that you have this authority and it hasn't been taken away. We're not enslaved in this new world, but we're still going to abide by the new world. But we can still live our own in our own area, our own village area, and. We could still live those traditional things. All we have to do is stand up and be counted for it, or at least let the states people know that we're not going to push over so easy without consultation. And then that got the UTA back together. It was all fired up again, and this is what we're doing now. Is just recently we was on the education station in K2, I think it was. Put out the cultural things and cross-cultural. You know, we got in with cross-cultural on K2 to let know what the our UTA is and to help pass the word on to the non-natives and the natives of what we're doing, because we needed to let the non-natives know also, so we can hear some of their side, you know, because it's hard to know what direction you're going if you're only hearing one side of the story. We recognize that, and that's why we wanted to put it over TV and just so everybody can be abreast. If the non-natives didn't know what was going on, then they got, we put them in the same situation that we're in. We didn't know what was going on with Angsco because we never had any follow-up or real true explanation. And if we're doing what we're doing now with the UTA, then the non-natives would get afraid again because they don't know what we're doing. It would look like we're rebelling or something. That isn't our intent. We wanted to educate the non-natives of some of the aspects of the native culture. It's kind of a training program for all of us to revitalize our living styles, our old living styles that's been passed down to us. But we needed to teach the non-natives too, so they can know what's going on and they can better understand us. And that was the main drive. And then with the UTA as our group, we needed that to draw, for the federal government or the state to draw focus on that. We are trying to get somebody's attention to listen to us. AFN done and still does a real good, a lot of good down in Washington. But that's all they hear is, they don't hear the real Alaskans down in Washington. When people go down there for their, when they have trouble with their allotments, land allotments and everything, and the state's going through some of these private properties, you know, they say, well, it's for the good of the people, but still, you have to get permission or negotiate, not just run over with people. So we try to go down, talk to our congressmen, to talk down in Washington, D.C., to advocate, and they just said, well, go to AFN, because that's all we know. Well, there's more than just the AFN. There's other people, because AFN just represents their corporations. So that's another thing what the UTA was born for, because we needed another way to get into Washington, D.C. to be heard. And those are some of those things that I was talking about or alluding to earlier, is that why these kind of organizations seem to pull us apart. It's because of lack of communication. And by listening to all the testimonies, it assures in my mind that there is a definite gap in communication between the federal government and the IRA people and traditional governments. They seem to act on what they think is best for us without consulting us, and then if some of them they consult, but then they still arbitrarily go. But there's a communication gap there that we can't get back into. With this ANCSCA, where that communication gap is, when it was pushed through so fast and a lot of things got deleted on it, it left us without knowing what the full purpose was. It wasn't explained down to the village levels completely, because we wasn't part of it. It wasn't ratified by us, so we can understand it and we could feel really part of the movement. And then the money came, but the land never came. And that really hurt a lot of the corporations, because even though we realized a corporation wasn't going to be what we thought it was, but still we have pride in it, and whatever is assigned to us to take on, we go full speed on it. We grab the ball and carry it, or run with it. But we're still lacking the land. And this is the part where I was talking about the communications gap with the federal government and our people here, is that I don't know if this thing was intentional to, I keep thinking, or I can't help but keep thinking why these different programs that the federal government comes out with is made to test the native people in Alaska, see how long they could stick together culturally or traditionally. And we always seem to shoulder those responsibilities and accept the shortfalls of them. And we keep looking back for the federal government to give us an answer. Why can't we get a decent treatment? Or why can't you talk with us, you know, come closer to us and sit across a table or beside us on the table when you want to do something? Take your time, because we only have one life to live. We need your, in order for us to understand the federal government, we need to come closer to you. Yes, we're humans just like they are, the federal government. Because it seems like federal government is a different class of people than the real federal government, which is supposed to be the people of the nation. The people that makes the federal government, and that's where we was taught in school. And it seems like there's always, it's a different breed of federal government. Because I thought I was part of it, but we can't. But we need. I seem like I'm trying to get. I'm kind of going in a circle, but. I think that's why you see we feel all these frustrations. There's just a lot of it's lack of communication with the federal people. I don't know if I completed on the United Tribes of Alaska. Did you have any questions on that?
No.
You understand it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think this commission is really going to help us out also. At least it'll help me out if we have transcription of when you transcribe these, and if we can get them back to the village people, that'll help us, like we could read it in a book or something, or that'll help us understand how we're fitting with the rest of the villages, how we are all, you know, we seem like we're scattered, we're divided into districts and everything, that the districts vote against each other, you know, on programs, so we're voting against ourselves, which we never did before. We always worked together. But with this book, I think it's going to help clarify, or at least put us in line of, or a train of thought. It looks that way to me. When you get it all straightened out, then it'll show a direction of what needs to be done.
Yes, I hope so. That's what I hope we can do.
Yeah. But I think a lot of the problems could be alleviated if the federal government would just try to listen to the people, the native people themselves. Like There is a little confusion, you know, these IRAs and traditional village councils. We're a government-to-government to the federal government. That's under PL 95-638, where a lot of them was reorganized under. But then we try to go after funds or something, and the state said we can't help you. We try to talk to our congressmen, and they say, well, that's a state problem. It's not a government or a federal problem. You heard a lot of people, or you heard some of our senators say that. Especially when we put those people in there, then they turn in another direction. But that's why a lot of these things are confusing. We feel that since the federal government made these organizations or these agencies or these roads for us to travel on, like the 638, that he would be able to listen to us, talk to us, because we're government to government. But we still comply with the state laws. We do, because we like to keep continuity with the people that's around us. Want to work with the state laws, but it seems like it doesn't go back the other way, come back to us that way. The state doesn't want to recognize us or work with us. There's adverse publicity in the lower 48 with the non-natives saying we're getting these special treatments so that our congressman doesn't want to do anything. When the people come call on them down there to help us out up here, because of publicity saying we're already getting too much already, too many special treatments, which we're not. We're just asking for what we need to closely resemble the things that we used to do, a little more freedom. This is a democracy world, land of the free, but we're tied up. The land issues is still there, and I hear it all over the state. The railroad is, they're trying to push the railroad too, but they're not going to answer the land issues there. And the way it sounds like, it's not going to be really addressed. So I'm afraid of those things too. Not only for the land that it's going to be involved, but for the whole state itself. We can't afford that thing. But if we can get communications from federal government and the people that are really wanting to work with us, not coming to us and then start with a glazed look as we're talking to them and they're staring out the window or something, that isn't going to help us either. We need to look at them eyeball to eyeball. Then they'll help us out. Then I don't think we'll have this upheaval, that this mistrust and everything that's going on. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Speaker. Chish ho.
Anyone else wish to testify this time? Yes, sir.
Yes, my name is Miles Murphy. I'm the mayor for the city of Huna, also a shareholder of Huna Totem and Sea Alaska. Right now I'm speaking as a mayor. My complaint has to deal with a section of the NASCAC under the reconveyance to municipalities. Each municipality is entitled to 1,280 acres, a minimum of, which is fine except for one thing. Sea Alaska owns the subsurface rights. The corporation, local corporation, owns the service rights. What in the hell do we have? How can we solve that? This kind of puts municipalities into kind of a bind. Suppose some big outfit comes in and wants to put in a department store or something. It's going to be rather hard for them, knowing that the Sea Alaska can come at any time and dig up what's underneath them. They own what's under the ground. And I kind of feel that was kind of a stupid clause in the darn thing. If you're going to reconvey land to any municipality, I think they should waive those subsurface and surface rights. I'm sure I'm not the only mayor that feels this way. And it's created a hell of a problem with us in the past, and still is creating a problem. How can you sell land out there if you want to get rid of your land and make a little money, the revenues? Knowing that you can't cut the person buys that land, and he knows he can't cut the timber unless the corporation tells him so. Then you give him all the money, or give the corporation all the money. And see, Alaska frowns if you can start digging down under the ground or anything. That was a complaint. Oh, I have a question. What can be done about that?
Well, I'm glad you brought that point up. It's one that I would like to look into. As regards what can be done about it, that is something that I can't answer now. But I'd like to ask you a couple more questions, if I may.
Well, I can answer. I'll do my best.
Yeah. Has the 1,280 acres been conveyed by the Village Corporation to the
We had a partial reconveyance of 1130. A quitclaim deed until the corporation gets their final papers on their land. Because all they can do is quitclaim to us right now.
And so you haven't, the municipality hasn't, in fact, then put any of the land up for sale. You're not in a position to do that at this stage, I take it.
Not with this thing hanging over us. That clause in NASCAC stating that the regional corporation had the subsurface rights and local corporation service rights.